This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
Hello, welcome to Startup to Success with Maria. My guest today is Elika Detsetan Foley, who is Vision's new executive director as of March 2nd, 2020. She is joining Visions following years of work as a director in nonprofits and higher education, years teaching as a professor of peace and conflict studies. Elika, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so thrilled to have you. I can't wait to dive in and talk about Visions and God, everything that you guys do there. But before we begin, I love starting my interviews with, what inspired you to do what you do? What
was the
journey like?
The journey is an interesting one, and it's not a direct, you know, one-way route whatsoever. My background is Persian, and for anyone who knows Persians, they may know that as I was growing up, my options really, by my parents, were told to be a doctor, an engineer, or a lawyer. And so I knew I wasn't going to be a doctor or an engineer. So I went into law. So I went into law. And I think my experience with law was the first time I really, I'm going to say, lost that naivety and that innocence. And let me back up. So my last name, Dotsaton, I found out at some point means prosecutor. And so I thought, you know, it was divine intervention. I had to be a prosecutor. And I really didn't understand the criminal punishment system. I thought if you do something wrong, you know, clearly you get punished and that's a natural process. I worked in narcotics as my first position and very quickly realized the racial inequities that came down to, you know, especially in narcotics specifically, I would see young Black men with the tiniest amount of crack cocaine. And it was the three strikes, you're out era, and they would go away for life. And then I'd see the same, you know, a young white man with more cocaine and it would be a slap on the wrist. And that didn't feel good. And I think that was the first time I realized there's more than that black and white, you did something right or wrong. So I quickly left law and went into education and was a teacher in the classroom for a couple of years, loved it. And I went back to school and got my master's in peace and justice. And that degree actually expected us to go abroad for about 10 weeks and do an internship. And my 10-week internship in West Africa turned into almost 10 years away. Started off in, you know, West Africa and Sierra Leone, working with the World Bank, doing social development work. So doing a lot of community consultations. And in that process, I really learned to listen to the community, you know, our stakeholders, the community. And from there, I pivoted into doing work in conflict areas. So I worked with refugees in Lebanon, but Syrian refugees specifically, or I worked in Sudan with internally displaced people. And so the thread that really has stayed with me through all my work that has been social justice, even when I didn't mean to necessarily at first or realize it, that's been the thread, you know, across all of my positions. So when I came back to the US, I was just burnt out. I felt the trauma everyone else around me was feeling. I just needed to come back. I wanted to be closer to my family. And that brought me back into higher education. Again, working with young people. And in my position in higher ed, besides, you know, teaching, it was really looking at how to support students, most often those who were first generation students, how to be successful. And again, in that role, you saw a lot of the systemic issues that we have in our society. So that is what, you know, brought me into thinking, I want to go back into nonprofit. I want to see if I can make, you know, more macro support, more macro changes. And when I heard about Visions, I just could not believe I hadn't heard about them my entire life. I mean, they've been around almost my entire life. Mm-hmm. And so I was just excited to apply and see what happens. And yeah, you know, 2 years later. So.
Oh, amazing. Right before our interview, we talked about the fact that this whole week I'm shining a light on nonprofits. And you said they've been around all your life, but you didn't hear about it. And that's one thing that I'm noticing, that with a lot of these nonprofits that are making the biggest changes in our society are just not known. People aren't aware about them. People aren't aware about the good work that they do. like stupid brands you hear about all day because they're just bombarding us with marketing. But then companies like Visions, nonprofit companies like Visions, is out there changing the world. And I personally didn't know about it either until we came across you and Visions, and we thought we would love to have the opportunity to interview you guys. So we'll dive into that a little bit later, but tell me a little bit about your background in terms of coming from Iran. Do you think that affected your choices in life in a sense, or did that maybe embed something in you from a young age that now is coming out and surfacing through your work?
I definitely think so. I mean, every part of our lived experiences make us who we are. So there's no way I can say no to that. I do think one of the strengths that comes from being an immigrant in general is your adaptability.
Yeah.
And for example, I took on this position about a week and a half prior to the national shutdown for COVID. And I think for a lot of people, it could have been really scary. And whether that's my, you know, rooted strength and adaptability, whether it's my background in emergency response, I mean, for me, it was really critical to have that strength because I was able to have the conversations I needed to have those community consultations I'm used to having with, you know, stakeholders and figure out what we needed to do. I think there's that, you know, there's definitely that piece of it. And I also think I'm used to being around differences and I'm very comfortable with disagreements. I'm very comfortable with diverse voices. And those are the types of contexts and people you need around you to be a successful business or community member or whatever. So I definitely think my background has a huge part of where I am today and who I am today.
It's funny when COVID happened and my kids were panicking, and then we would sometimes see military airplanes going around and my daughters would panic and my husband would, because he was in Iran when the war was happening, and he would just laugh at these girls and just be like, oh, you guys haven't seen anything yet, you know, we used to get bombed and run downstairs to the basement and, you know, he would hear the sirens. So I do think that growing up the way we did, I came from Armenia as an immigrant myself. And I escaped the Soviet Union. So for me, I grew up hearing that as a girl, I'm not allowed to do certain things. So, and I find myself now empowering women on a daily basis, whether it's through my radio show, my, you know, my marketing efforts, however it is, or just simply mentoring them and giving them business advice. I find myself just wanting to uplift the women because of simply what I went through as a child, you know, being told that I can't do certain things.
Sure. Absolutely. And I think that's really important to keep in mind is, you know, we might not remember where these drives come from, and they do. For me, I think I was really young. I was a few months old when we left Iran, and it was a very accidental left Iran. And so, you know, I get the privilege of having this U.S. passport that says born in Iran, which therefore means my U.S. passport doesn't actually have as much, you know, weight as it could. And oftentimes, you know, I don't have a Persian accent because I did grow up here most of my life, you know, and English was my third language, but it was so long ago that I don't really have one. And so in the same vein, I'm too Americanized for the Persian culture also. So I really am this third culture kid where I don't necessarily 100% belong in either of my cultures. And I, you know, you have to kind of figure out where you belong. And so I think the work that I do now is also so important to me because I know that a sense of belonging is so critical for, and not just for young people, but really for everyone across the board. And I think that's part of when you think about retention in the business, in your business, do your people feel like they belong in that space? And I feel it to the core as a person.
That's amazing. Tell me a little bit about Visions. I know it started back in 1984, so it's been around for a long time. Just give us a little bit of a background.
Sure. So Visions actually it's an acronym, and it stands for Vigorous Interventions in Ongoing Natural Settings. And I actually love what that stands for. And there's a reason why we call it Visions and don't say that every single time, but it's Vigorous Interventions in Ongoing Natural Settings. And so when I really think about that, I think about, you know, especially in diversity, equity, inclusion work today, oftentimes people just want someone to come in, do an hour workshop and leave. And we acknowledge that it's a long journey. It's not, no one's intended to
get in and get out and figure it all out. Right. So I really appreciate that the vigorous interventions piece of that. But it was an organization started in 1984 by three Black women and one Jewish man. The man married one of the women. And they grew up in the South. So they grew up at a time when it was like segregation was legal and it was the law of the land. So, you know, in the 60s, when the law started to change, our founders watched racism become more asymptomatic. So just because the laws were technically changed, it doesn't necessarily mean that justice was served or, you know, racists now became illegal. And so the people who believed in all of that didn't necessarily go away and people really went underground. And part of the conversation was racism is going to now show up in different ways. So it's going to show up on the personal level, you know, your own thoughts, potentially your interpersonal level, culturally as a society, and then in institutional policies, which we see. And one of our founders, Dr. Val, her PhD is in clinical psych. And so she created this model on, you know, how to do this work. And she had posited that give it time, you know, give it a few decades, give it a little bit of time, and you're going to see this come back up and look at us now. So it's, you know, not surprising at all. But our founders really shared this passion for intervening in systems, you know, whatever that system might be, where equity can be practiced. And growing up in the South, growing up in North Carolina specifically, during the civil rights movement, they really got to experience the negative consequences of living and working in those systems. One of our founders is a lawyer, and she went into legislature, you know, state legislature. And so really on different levels, they got to experience that. And they knew that we had to learn to recognize differences. We needed to understand and appreciate differences. And so Visions was really created to promote the benefits of multiculturalism, continue that legacy of justice that they've been working so hard toward, you know, their entire lives. So that's what the organization does. I mean, really do. I mean, so traditionally it's been consulting work, trainings, things like that. And in the last couple of years, due to, you know, being forced to kind of rethink how we do the work, we've expanded that out a little bit and we're working on expanding it out. And having the impact be seen in different ways in different places.
So who are your target audiences, I guess, when you're talking about training? Who do you guys train? Is it people? Is it organizations?
All of it, all of them. We have a 4-day workshop. Traditionally, we've had a 4-day workshop where called PACE, and it's a personalized approach to change and equity. And that's really like a self-growth, self-focused training. So you can do it as an individual. You don't have to have your company per se send you. People have done that. And then we also work with different organizations. We work with corporate organizations, with educational institutions, with healthcare system. I mean, across the board, religious affiliated organizations. So anyone and everyone who really wants support in, you know, having those difficult conversations, especially wanting to acknowledge the multicultural differences within an organization, can reach out to us and we can support the conversations on, you know, we can do assessments, whether what's going on, it can be support in having those the difficult conversations and so on and so forth.
I know that when I was working for an ad agency targeting all the tech startups, I know that there was this trend with the tech startups to really work on diversity within the workplace. And I remember, and I've heard of PACE, if I'm not mistaken, we did some kind of a program or they brought in a doctor to help us with goal setting and all of that. Like he was coaching us. And I remember he mentioned PACE. I just don't remember exactly. This was like 10 years ago. I don't remember exactly how and what form he presented that to us, but PACE sounds so familiar to me. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of them started bringing different coaches, consultants to help with diversity, help us understand how to get along with each other. And especially in advertising, when there are so many creative minds and they all think their ideas are the best and they come from different cultures and backgrounds, it can be a conflict to come to a conclusion and make a decision on what idea we're going to move forward with, you know, or what are the strategies we're going to implement. So it's, you know, I feel like that industry has been in need of this help yourself. Now, if an organization like that, and I own a marketing agency myself too, and if we were interested in bringing on somehow, either getting involved in your webinars or just participating, how does that part work? Do we need to, do you guys have like a payment system, programs, like packages? What's the process?
No, it's a great question. I mean, it's across the board. We have all of our different webinars and different events on our website. So you can look at visions-inc.org and you can see all of that there. A lot of our webinars are no cost. You know, when we have things that are more like a summit, we actually have our spring summit coming up on this year. And that has a cost. No matter what we do, there's always an acknowledgement that we will never push, you know, turn you away because of cost. So if there is a need to have that discussion, we're always open to having that discussion. And so either there's a sliding scale or even have a conversation about reciprocity and bartering. I mean, so we're making sure, as much as we can, make sure it's not prohibitive, cost prohibitive. So it's funny you mentioned that, you know, in a marketing agency, there's so many different thoughts and everyone has different opinions. And I really think of that as across the board everywhere. Everyone has different thoughts and opinions. And one of the things, one of our guidelines that we often live by is to practice both and thinking. And when speaking, we often say substitute but for and. And that really helps acknowledge the and honors the multiple realities that we have. So for example, if we're sitting in the same room, I'm wearing a sweater, I'm really cold, and you're, you know, in a tank top or whatever, neither of us are wrong in how we're feeling, right? It's our reality. So we try to see things through that lens.
You know, when I was working at New York Times, I was the director of the execution team, and our team was always under a lot of pressure, working long hours to execute the campaign. Our sales reps would oversell everything, and then we had to make it happen. And working with influencers was very stressful at times. And I remember my meetings when I first got hired, the team was so unhappy and they felt like they were doing all the work, they were working the hardest in the company, but somehow all the other departments were having so much fun and getting away with very little work while they were doing all the work. And so I realized that if I take the approach where I'm always sitting in a room and having a face-to-face meeting with them, I'm never going to get anywhere with my team. So our office was on 2nd Street in Santa Monica, right across from the beach, the ocean. So I would take them, or sometimes one person at a time, and we would literally go walking on the beach side by side, and we would talk about things, strategize. You know, sometimes I had to give a constructive criticism, but it was always together walking side by side. So they never felt like I was confronting them. And so, you know, I when you said instead of but say and, you know, some of those approaches I've used where it was like, I hate the word but, don't say but, let's talk about more solutions, you know? So tell me a little bit about some of the things that you guys do to help people understand how they can improve diversity in their workplaces specifically.
Yeah, that's a great question. And even actually, before I go there, I think something you just said really resonated with me. And I loved hearing that instead of having this transactional, let's just get this done, let's sit across and just do it, you really value the relationship. And I think that's something as an organization, we value absolutely. And we hope that that can be passed on to other organizations. The work that we do has really been rooted in Afrocentric values. And one of those values is community. It's acknowledging that I don't exist without you. We need one another and that connectedness. And so when I think about the diverse, I mean, so I also think it depends on the culture and the organization. What does diversity mean? We all have intersectionalities of various group memberships that we're a part of. You know, I identify as a female. I am an immigrant. English is my third language. I am a person of color, you know, that so on and so forth. And that I also belong in certain historically included group memberships. I'm educated, you know, so on and so forth. So I think it depends on what you're looking for and what the intention of diversity is. You know, I think oftentimes a lot of organizations will say, let's just bring it in, like bring them in, whoever they are, just to check the box that we've done it. And maybe not necessarily value those differences for what they actually are and the lived experiences that are actually being brought, the diverse voices that are being brought. When there is disagreement, it might not be really truly welcomed, and disagreement again is very natural. So I think it depends. And I think when an organization is thinking about why, it's important to think about it. You know, do I really value wanting those diverse voices, or am I just checking the box? So I think it's the best way I can answer that with what I have.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.